I think in our last section, Sri Aurobindo was describing how it is that there could be an unseen process in which the human vehicle, the body, is prepared by enabling assistance from above. Just touching upon the close of the last paragraph will remind us where we were. The secret psychical entity already there in the animal might have itself called down the mental being, the mind purusha, into the realm of living matter in order to take up the vital mental energy already at work and lift it into a higher mentality. But this would still be a process of evolution, the higher plane only intervening to assist the appearance and enlargement of its own principle in terrestrial nature. So it's not cheating the course of evolution to give a little insight, to give a little impetus, but still things have to be worked out from below. But there is this concourse, there is this collocation of energies. The universe is one, and all the planes are involved in a great conversation. Ideas, energies flowing back and forth. And still, it is up for the physical tenement which will house the human mind to be prepared to receive it, and, as he will say next, how to develop beyond it. So I think we can go forward now. Next, it may be conceded that each type or pattern of consciousness and being in the body, once established, has to be faithful to the law of being of that type, to its own design and rule of nature. This is that idea that he described in paragraphs behind us now, that once a form has been arrived at in nature, that heritability wants to maintain itself. It wants to fix itself, but not in an absolute way. It is possible to improve, to build upon. But left to itself, it will behave and routinize its life, its existence, according to the law of its nature, the law of its being. But it may also very well be that part of the law of the human type is its impulse towards self-exceeding, that the means for a conscious transition has been provided for among the spiritual powers of man. The possession of such a capacity may be a part of the plan on which the creative energy has built him. Now, this is interesting. He uses this term, self-exceeding, a number of times in the Life Divine. And this idea was associated with the philosophy of evolution emerging from the 19th century. Friedrich Nietzsche himself used this term. And he felt that even though we're bound to the finite form, the rigid structure which we begin with, that is the immediate tenement in which we live, nevertheless, we can surpass the finitude with creativity and imagination and freedom. So we see right here Sri Aurobindo is making similar comments. The creative energy has invested this in the human so that it can emerge. And this leads to his next idea. It may be conceded that what man has up till now principally done is to act within the circle of his nature, on a spiral of nature movement, sometimes descending, sometimes ascending, there has been no straight line of progress, no indisputable, fundamental, or radical exceeding of his past nature. What he has done is to sharpen, subtilize, make a more and more complex and plastic use of his capacities. It cannot truly be said that there has been no such thing as human progress since man's appearance, or even in his recent ascertainable history. For however great the ancients, however supreme some of their achievements and creations, however impressive their powers of spirituality, of intellect, or of character, there has been, in later developments, an increasing subtlety, complexity, manifold development of knowledge and possibility in man's achievements, in his politics, society, life, science, metaphysics, knowledge of all kinds, art, literature, even in his spiritual endeavor, less surprisingly lofty and less massive in its power of spirituality than that of the ancients. There has been this increasing subtlety, plasticity, sounding of depths, extension of seeking. So we have here a longer articulation of something he said with great brevity in Essays on the Gita, that we belong not to the dawns of the past, but to the noons of the future. However much we appreciate and treasure what our great civilizations have accomplished in the past, whether it's the wisdom of India or the philosophy of Greece or the art of France, we have yet to reach our culmination. We must continue to grow. He says, there have been falls from a high type of culture, a sharp temporary descent into a certain obscurantism, cessations of the spiritual urge, plunges into a barbaric natural materialism. But these are temporary phenomena, at worst, a downward curve of the spiral of progress. So you see this idea that we move up, we come back a little bit, but we spiral up again. And so there is a general upward movement, even though there seem to be periods of reversal. Fear not, the spirit continues to march through all that seems to indict it for its imperfections. This progress, he says, has not indeed carried the race beyond itself into a self-exceeding, a transformation of the mental being, but that was not to be expected. For the action of evolutionary nature in a type of being and consciousness is first to develop the type to its utmost capacity by just such a subtilization and increasing complexity till it is ready for her bursting of the shell, the ripened, decisive emergence, reversal, turning over of consciousness on itself that constitutes a new stage in the evolution. So the human first stabilizes, assembles the form, achieves some grand advance, perhaps in an individual here and there, but slowly collectivizes it, slowly develops it. It becomes part of a culture which is transmissible. And then, in that prepared vehicle, personal and social, there can emerge the sudden change of consciousness, first articulated in the pioneering individual, and then in the community that has the necessary stuff within it to manifest and hold that consciousness and make that new arena of awareness available for play in the earth nature. If it be supposed, he writes, that her next step is the spiritual and supramental being. The stress of spirituality in the race may be taken as a sign that that is nature's intention. The sign, too, of the capacity of man to operate in himself or aid her to operate the transition. So it's embedded in us. The signature of this advance is already on the paper. The ink is drying. We're ready to go. We can assist this Chit Shakti in the manifestation of this new consciousness. That is what the stress of spirituality means inside us, that it will not stop. It continues to push. If the appearance in animal being of a type similar in some respects to the ape kind, but already from the beginning endowed with the elements of humanity, was the method of the human evolution, the appearance in the human being of a spiritual type resembling mental animal humanity, but already with the stamp of the spiritual aspiration on it, would be the obvious method of nature for the evolutionary production of the spiritual and supramental being. So there is a comparison here, moving from the epitome of the animal kingdom, from ape to human, to manifest fully the mind, and in the same way, to move from the human to the supramental, to manifest the divine consciousness. It is pertinently suggested that if such an evolutionary culmination is intended, and man is to be its medium, it will only be a few especially evolved human beings who will form the new type and move towards the new life. That, once done, the rest of humanity will sink back from a spiritual aspiration no longer necessary for nature's purpose and remain quiescent in its normal status. Now, these are ideas that belong to evolutionary thinking of the late 19th and early 20th century. Even some theosophists held these views. This is not Sri Aurobindo's perspective, and he cannot accept it. So he says, it can equally be reasoned that the human gradation must be preserved if there is really an ascent of the soul by reincarnation through the evolutionary degrees towards the spiritual summit. For otherwise, the most necessary of all the intermediate steps will be lacking. So humanity is a necessary link in evolution on the earth through the secret process of rebirth. Now, Sri Aurobindo's idea of this ascent, of a general ascent, a cosmic ascent, through this secret machinery behind the scenes, becoming more and more fully articulated in the human soul, is rather unique to him. We don't see such a perfect picture harmonizing the individual and the cosmos in any other scheme. It isn't even there in Indian thinking, not to this scale, not to this depth. So you're seeing something new here. It must be conceded at once that there is not the least probability or possibility of the whole human race rising in a block to the supramental level. What is suggested is nothing so revolutionary and astonishing, but only the capacity in the human mentality, when it has reached a certain level or a certain point of stress of the evolutionary impetus, to press towards a higher plane of consciousness and its embodiment in the being. So no general transformation is part of the picture. But there is this possibility within the human mentality already nascent which can press towards the discovery and manifestation of this larger and higher consciousness. The being will necessarily undergo, by this embodiment, a change from the normal constitution of its nature, a change certainly of its mental and emotional and sensational constitution, and also to a great extent of the body consciousness and the physical conditioning of our life and energies. But the change of consciousness will be the chief factor. The initial movement, the physical modification, will be a subordinate factor, a consequence. So it's this stress of consciousness within us, this spiritual being which wants to grow, the psychic wanting to stretch beyond the mind into the supramental, that is the critically important thing. But it will have its effect on the entire embodiment. It will change the way the mind sees, the way the heart feels. It will affect the manner and the flexibility and the strength in which the body expresses itself in terms of life, in terms of cognition, mind, and this greater consciousness beyond. So, in a sense, this is the higher consciousness imposing itself on the physical. Yes, there is an evolution, and you can mark it to greater and greater degrees with newer and newer bodies capable of holding higher and higher grades of consciousness. But it is the interchange of consciousness that is primary. And of course, the change of consciousness must imprint itself upon the body. This transmutation of the consciousness will always remain possible to the human being when the flame of the soul, the psychic kindling, becomes potent in heart and mind and the nature is ready. The spiritual aspiration is innate in man, for he is, unlike the animal, aware of imperfection and limitation, and feels that there is something to be attained beyond what he now is. This urge towards self-exceeding is not likely ever to die out totally in the race. The human mental status will be always there, but it will be there not only as a degree in the scale of rebirth, but as an open step towards the spiritual and supramental status. So to Sri Aurobindo, humanity is indispensable. It isn't going to be that a few specimens, finely developed, hugely expanded, will grow into a supramental consciousness and everything else fall back into desuetude and eventually disappear, perhaps, but that the human marking mentality, finding that station in embodiment and consistently able to hold that place for mind upon earth, should not disappear. The supramental, therefore, would be another range of conscious being other than humanity. Now the question is, what about humanity? What role does it play? So let me read from this sentence again. This transmutation of the consciousness will always remain possible to the human being when the flame of the soul, the psychic kindling, becomes potent in heart and mind and the nature is ready. The spiritual aspiration is innate in man, for he is, unlike the animal, aware of imperfection and limitation, and feels that there is something to be attained beyond what he now is. This urge towards self-exceeding is not likely ever to die out totally in the race. the human mental status will be always there, but it will be there not only as a degree in the scale of rebirth, but as an open step towards the spiritual and supramental status. So at the topmost rank of evolved mental beings, we find a platform from which we can leap into a greater consciousness, which is spiritual and supramental. To freedom and infinity, fulfilling Satchit Ananda. He continues, it must be observed that the appearance of human mind and body on the earth marks a crucial step, a decisive change in the course and process of the evolution. It is not merely a continuation of the old lines. Up till this advent of a developed thinking mind and matter, evolution had been affected not by the self-aware aspiration, intention, will, or seeking of the living being, but subconsciously or subliminally by the automatic operation of nature. So, whether it was done from below or whether it was done from behind, evolution was carried on by nature through other means. But now, with the arrival of the human, we can evolve intentionally through the force of our own will. This was so, he says, because the evolution began from the inconscience, and the secret consciousness had not emerged sufficiently from it to operate through the self-aware participating individual will of its living creature. But in man, the necessary change has been made. The being has become awake and aware of himself. There has been made manifest in mind its will to develop, to grow in knowledge, to deepen the inner and widen the outer existence, to increase the capacities of the nature. Man has seen that there can be a higher status of consciousness than his own. The evolutionary estrus is there in his parts of mind and life. The aspiration to exceed himself is delivered and articulate within him. He has become conscious of a soul, discovered the self and spirit. Estrus, from the Greek oistros, gadfly, which means it puts you in a vehement frenzy. So the evolutionary urge is irrepressible. It absolutely insists on going forward. It can't be stopped. In him, then, the substitution of a conscious for a subconscious evolution has become conceivable and practicable, and it may well be concluded that the aspiration, the urge, the persistent endeavor in him is a sure sign of nature's will for a higher way of fulfillment, the emergence of a greater status. I think I've said this before, earlier. I think it was noted by sages and philosophers who were keenly acquainted with the human condition, that you look at all beings in the world. Of course, this is a human perspective of things. You look at all beings in the world, and you find that they are, in a sense, satisfied, content with their status of attainment in the evolutionary chain. But the human alone is discontented. This is particularly voiced by those in the Zen school of thinking. I don't think that answers to a truth, because we find many animals, if you know how to commune with the consciousness of a plant or an animal, you feel the urge to become more, to grow, to aspire is natural to all living beings. And so the whole course of life upon earth and all of its many branchings offers great ground upon which to stand in order to evolve beyond. But yes, the mentality of the human is discontent. That we can see. But that other beings cannot also aspire and evolve. No, no, we do not accept that. In the previous stages of the evolution, nature's first care and effort had to be directed towards a change in the physical organization, for only so could there be a change of consciousness. This was a necessity imposed by the insufficiency of the force of consciousness already in formation to effect a change in the body. So, remember the allegory at the beginning about the gods looking for the right vehicle to manifest in, finally choose the human, because it was strong enough, it was plastic enough, it could hold the force. But in man, a reversal is possible, indeed inevitable. For it is through his consciousness, through its transmutation, and no longer through a new bodily organism as a first instrumentation, that the evolution can and must be effected. He has said in this statement that this new consciousness, the supramental consciousness, must somehow affix itself to the human body, must somehow manifest through and in the human body, without there coming a new form to hold it. In the inner reality of things, a change of consciousness was always the major fact. The evolution has always had a spiritual significance, and the physical change was only instrumental. But this relation was concealed by the first abnormal balance of the two factors, the body of the external in conscience outweighing and obscuring in importance the spiritual element, the conscious being. But once the balance has been righted, it is no longer the change of body that must precede the change of consciousness. The consciousness itself, by its mutation, will necessitate and operate whatever mutation is needed for the body. Sri Aurobindo could not be more clear in this statement. He expects that the body capable of sustaining the supramental consciousness will be formed by the descending, empowering supramental consciousness itself, using the human body as the means, as the form in which to work. Consciousness changing matter. It has to be noted, he says, that the human mind has already shown a capacity to aid nature in the evolution of new types of plant and animal. It has created new forms of its environment, developed by knowledge and discipline, considerable changes in its own mentality. It is not an impossibility that man should aid nature consciously also in his own spiritual and physical evolution and transformation. The urge to it is already there and partly effective, though still incompletely understood and accepted by the surface mentality. But one day it may understand, go deeper within itself, and discover the means, the secret energy, the intended operation of the consciousness force within, which is the hidden reality of what we call nature. So mind is searching for the meaning and the key to gain the secret of self. And the secret of self is in the real being who has expressed herself through her consciousness and force as nature and is awaiting us to discover her. And then our aspiration will complement her insistence that the evolution proceed, and we will work in harmony for that transformation. All these, he writes, are conclusions that can be arrived at even from an that can be arrived at even from the observation of the outward phenomena of nature's progression. Her surface evolution of being and of consciousness in the physical birth and the body. But there is the other, the invisible factor. There is rebirth, the progress of the soul by ascent from grade to grade of the evolving existence, and in the grades to higher and higher types of bodily and mental instrumentation. In this progression, the psychic entity is still veiled, even in man, the conscious mental being, by its instruments, by mind and life and body. It is unable to manifest fully, held back from coming to the front where it can stand out as the master of its nature, obliged to submit to a certain determination by the instruments, to a domination of Purusha by Prakriti. But in man, the psychic part of the personality is able to develop with a much greater rapidity than in the inferior creation, and a time can arrive when the soul entity is close to the point at which it will emerge from behind the veil into the open and become the master of its instrumentation in nature. But this will mean that the secret indwelling spirit, the daimon, the Godhead within, is on the point of emergence. And when it emerges, it can hardly be doubted that its demand will be, as indeed it already is in the mind itself when it undergoes the inner psychic influence, for a diviner, a more spiritual existence. In the nature of the earth life, where the mind is an instrument of the ignorance, this can only be effected by a change of consciousness, a transition from a foundation in ignorance to a foundation in knowledge, from the mental to a supramental consciousness, a supramental instrumentation of nature. There is no conclusive validity in the reasoning that because this is a world of ignorance, such a transformation can only be achieved by a passage to a heaven beyond, or cannot be achieved at all, and the demand of the psychic entity is itself ignorant and must be replaced by a merger of the soul in the absolute. This would mean the psychic role in the universe is annulled by the spiritual in this perspective. This would be the dissolution of the jivatman in the atman, the disappearance of the individual into the oceanic, only soul, real being. This, again, is not Sri Aurobindo's view. This conclusion could only be solely valid if ignorance were the whole meaning, substance, and power of the world manifestation, or if there were no element in world nature itself through which there could be an exceeding of the ignorant mentality that still burdens our present status of being. But the ignorance is only a portion of this world nature, It is not the whole of it, not the original power or creator. It is, in its higher origin, a self-limiting knowledge, and even in its lower origin, its emergence out of the sheer material in conscience, it is a suppressed consciousness laboring to find, to recover itself, to manifest knowledge, which is its true character as the foundation of existence. But we have studied this for chapters and chapters, haven't we? That ignorance is itself a formation of knowledge, a constriction, a restriction to ignore, to be something more. Yes, one can be that, but to focus, to install yourself in a very limited, narrow definition of what you are is what ignorance is. And it is always instinct with the power from which it came. And when it wants to grow and telescope itself back into fullness of being, then it can. Because ignorance is not nescience. It is knowledge hiding within itself. In universal mind itself, there are ranges above our mentality which are instruments of the cosmic truth cognition, and into these the mental being can surely rise, for already it rises towards them in supernormal conditions, or receives from them, without yet knowing or possessing them, intuitions, spiritual intimations, large influxes of illumination or spiritual capacity. All these ranges are conscious of what is beyond them, and the highest of them is directly open to the supermind, aware of the truth consciousness which exceeds it. So he's described this self-limiting knowledge, which is an aspect of pure, true existence, chit-shakti, as knowledge expressed in the supramental compresses itself, involves itself into a power of ignorance, but yet from that can reemerge and fulfill itself through cosmic evolution and capture all the grades of the involution that accompanied it as it made its way downward. And as we climb back and we reach the mind level, then all the ranges of the higher consciousness which stretch up to the supramental become active in us, visit us in moments, and we have access, as he describes here, and we'll describe more later, to these ranges of awareness. We will discover the higher mind, the illumined mind above that, intuition above the illumined mind, overmind above intuition, and above overmind, of course. Beyond that golden lid is the supramental sun. Moreover, he writes, in the evolving being itself, those greater powers of consciousness are here, supporting mind truth, underlying its action which screens them. This supermind and those truth powers uphold nature by their secret presence. Even truth of mind is their result, a diminished operation, a representation in partial figures. It is, therefore, not only natural, but seems inevitable that these higher powers of existence should manifest here in mind, as mind itself has manifested in life and matter. Man's urge towards spirituality is the inner driving of the spirit within him towards emergence, the insistence of the consciousness force of the being towards the next step of its manifestation. It is true that the spiritual urge has been largely otherworldly or turned at its extreme towards a spiritual negation and self-annihilation of the mental individual. But this is only one side of its tendency, maintained and made dominant by the necessity of passing out of the kingdom of the fundamental in conscience, overcoming the obstacle of the body, casting away the obscure vital, getting rid of the ignorant mentality, the necessity to attain first and foremost by a rejection of all these impediments to spiritual being, to a spiritual status. The other, the dynamic side of the spiritual urge, has not been absent. The aspiration to a spiritual mastery and mutation of nature, to a spiritual perfection of the being, a divinization of the mind, the heart, and the very body. There has even been the dream or a psychic prevision of a fulfillment exceeding the individual transformation, a new earth and heaven, a city of God, a divine descent upon earth, a reign of the spiritually perfect, a kingdom of God, not only within us, but outside, in a collective human life. However obscure may have been some of the forms taken by this aspiration, the indication they contain of the urge of the occult spiritual being within to emergence in earth nature is unmistakable. If a spiritual unfolding on earth is the hidden truth of our birth into matter, if it is fundamentally an evolution of consciousness that has been taking place in nature, then man as he is cannot be the last term of that evolution. He is too imperfect an expression of the spirit. Mind itself, a too limited form and instrumentation. Mind is only a middle term of consciousness. The mental being can only be a transitional being. If then, man is incapable of exceeding mentality, he must be surpassed. And supermind and superman must manifest and take the lead of the creation. But if his mind is capable of opening to what exceeds it, then there is no reason why man himself should not arrive at supermind and supermanhood, or at least lend his mentality, life, and body to an evolution of that greater term of the spirit manifesting in nature. What a prospect. So, that concludes chapter 23. Next week, we'll take up chapter 24. The evolution of the spiritual man. Tonight we'll conclude with a section from Savitri, which we read, I think, about 2.5 years ago. I think every few years we can read it again. This is in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, Canto 2, the Parable of the Search for the Soul. Out of the dim recesses of the self, the occult seeker into the open came. He heard the far and touched the intangible. He gazed into the future and the unseen. He used the powers earth instruments cannot use, a pastime made of the impossible. He caught up fragments of the omniscient's thought. He scattered formulas of omnipotence. Thus man in his little house made of earth's dust grew towards an unseen heaven of thought and dream, looking into the vast vistas of his mind on a small globe dotting infinity. At last, climbing a long and narrow stair, he stood alone on the high roof of things and saw the light of a spiritual sun. Aspiring, he transcends his earthly self. He stands in the largeness of his soul newborn, redeemed from encirclement by mortal things, and moves in a pure, free spiritual realm, as in the rare breath of a stratosphere. A last end of far lines of divinity, he mounts by a frail thread to his high source. He reaches his fount of immortality. He calls the Godhead into his mortal life. All this the spirit concealed had done in her. A portion of the mighty mother came into her as into its own human part. Amid the cosmic workings of the gods, it marked her the center of a wide-drawn scheme, dreamed in the passion of her far-seeing spirit to mold humanity into God's own shape and lead this great, blind, struggling world to light, or a new world discover or create. Earth must transform herself and equal heaven, or heaven descend into earth's mortal state. But for such vast spiritual change to be, out of the mystic cavern in man's heart, the heavenly psyche must put off her veil and step into common nature's crowded rooms and stand uncovered in that nature's front, and rule its thoughts, and fill the body and life. Obedient to a high command she sat. Time, life, and death were passing incidents, obstructing with their transient view her sight. Her sight that must break through and liberate the God imprisoned in the visionless mortal man. The inferior nature, born into ignorance, still took too large a place. It veiled herself and must be pushed aside to find her soul. Namaste. Jai Ma.